We don't treat brains in like silos. We're not like individual parts that if we put all the wheels together, it'll just run. Our bodies work in like systems where they interact with each other. So understanding your symptom profile is step one. And then step two is, okay, how do I comprehensively work with that together? And I think if people see themselves as a whole and see themselves as an individual, it really helps get them into proper treatment faster and get better faster. And I think it prevents a lot of like treatment chasing. I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. I'm going to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I think if there's anything I could impart, it would be to start to get that under your belt and then go from there.
There is always hope, and you are not alone.
Hi, I'm Christabel Braden, and this is my brain injury podcast, Hope Survives. Here, we share information, education, and support for the brain injury community. This is an uplifting podcast to bring hope to your darkest days. As a survivor of traumatic brain injury and multiple concussions, I know what it's like to struggle to find hope. I don't want anyone to feel as alone as I did, and that's why I started my online community called Hope After Head Injury. This podcast is an extension of that, and I'd love to invite you to join along as we explore the realities of life with brain injury, with messages of encouragement, interviews with doctors and professionals, and survivor stories. No matter where you're at on your journey, there is always hope.
With a little hope, you can make it through today. With a little faith, someday you'll get through the pain. Just a little love is enough to light the way through your darkest night. Hope survives. Hope survives. Survives.
Welcome back once again to Hope Survives podcast. Now, you know that phrase, hope survives, how much it means to me. I originally wrote a song called Hope Survives back in 2015 and released it as a single back then, just me and the piano and a couple instruments, and it was re-released in 2017 in my EP, Hope Survives, which if you've heard the song, you've heard that version, the slower piano version of Hope Survives. Now, I'm so excited to announce next week on March 25th, I have a brand new single version of Hope Survives coming out. This was recorded in Nashville at the beginning of the year, and I wanted to do a version that celebrates how far I've come in my recovery journey and how far we've all come together. So while the first version of Hope Survives is slower and it focuses more on the struggles, you know, through your darkest night, Hope Survives. It kind of has that feel of I'm struggling through it. This version has a little bit of a country pop feel. It's more upbeat and it's more of the celebration of hope. And so I wanted this song to make people feel hopeful. So I got a bunch of singers, some of my friends to come and sing backgrounds on it. So there's a crowd of people singing along. I got some great musicians in Nashville playing it, and it is coming out next week. So please, if you are interested in listening to the new version, you can visit my social media, Christabel Braden, and find the links to pre-save the, pre-save the song, which means you can put in your information on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you listen to music, and it'll automatically be downloaded to your library. So I wanted to let you know about that. And also next week, I'm doing my first ever virtual concert. Ah, so excited. I really hope you can make it. It's virtual, so anyone can come from anywhere. And it's Friday night, March 25th. If you can't make it live and you are listening to this before that and you still want to sign up, you can sign up, and watch the playback. That'll only be available to people who sign up and donate. Now, when I say donate, there's no set ticket price. So even better, it's a virtual concert, but it benefits the Brain Injury Association of Pennsylvania's Survivor Scholarships. So I'm partnering with BIAPA for this virtual conference. So you can donate as little or as much as you want, and that's your ticket price. It's a tax-deductible donation to them. So it's going to be great. I'm going to be doing Q&A, answering questions. That's what Q&A means. Singing some of my songs, and my sister is joining me on the cello to accompany me. I'll be playing guitar and piano, not at the same time, and singing. So it's going to be a great night, and I hope you can make it to celebrate Brain Injury Awareness Month together. Now, another thing is, you may know we have a monthly Zoom support group. That meeting is also next week, so it's a chock full week. And if you're not yet on our support group email list, you can sign up at hopeafterheadinjury.com/community. The link is always in the description of our podcast, but I just wanted to let you know about that as well. Now, today's episode. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month, and besides all these things that I have going on at the end of the month, we have a great episode for you today with Dr. Molly Parker, the owner of Concussion Compass. She's a physical therapist and a concussion survivor herself. So this episode, I chose the title Uncovering Your Personal Path to Recovery because Dr. Molly talks a lot about the uniqueness of each injury and the need for comprehensive care. She also dives into the different types and subtypes of concussions. So what symptoms you might have and what that means, understanding your individual injury, your individual symptoms, and kind of where to go from there. The overall message of hope is that there are things you can do. It's treatable. And she also shares some of her own experience with her own concussion and how she establishes routine and boundaries in her own journey. So I hope that this episode and, of course, is the message of this podcast always inspires you that there is hope for your journey and that you are not alone. So I hope that you know that. And thank you for listening and being here with us on Hope Survives Podcast. You are valued. You are not alone. And let's get started with today's episode. Thanks for tuning in. Today, I am here with the one and only Dr. Molly Parker. I've been trying to get Molly on this podcast for a while, and we finally worked out in our schedules, and she is just a knowledge ball. I don't know what to say. I was going to say like knowledge bomb, but I don't know.
I like she's, ball.
She's a ball of knowledge.
I love that.
And this is going to be great. So you guys are in for a treat. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad we finally get to do this.
Yes, me too. So do you want to introduce a little bit about yourself and who you are?
Yeah. So my name is Molly Parker. I'm a physical therapist by trade, and I got into concussions kind of accidentally. In 2011, I had, you know, my dream job. I was in this, you know, small little orthopedic clinic that I loved, and I was hit by a cab driver who fell asleep at the wheel. And at the time, you know, concussions weren't really talked about. So I just thought it was one of those things that went away. It didn't. And back then, nobody knew it was happening. So I just got progressively worse and worse and worse. I mean, really for years until I was completely debilitated. And it was kind of this moment where it was like the information just wasn't out there. And I had to do all the research on my own. And eventually I did, you know, claw my way out significantly. I still have symptoms to this day, but many of them developed later on, particularly the ones I deal with now. And so when I was at my worst, I would just lay there and think of like, this shouldn't be this hard. Like, what could we do that's different? And then I would think, well, it's going to take, you know, 20 years on average to get from research to clinical practice. And the research is barely just getting there. So I kind of started to think like, how do we like circumvent that? Like what other ways that we what would I have needed to get what I needed faster and to get better faster? And that's kind of how Compass was created, was figuring out how we could get this information to people worldwide so that they could recover as quickly as possible and with as little, I don't know, stress as possible. It's never going to be completely stress-free, but one of those things where people were getting the information support they needed rather than being told it's psychological or it's never going to get better or it's just learn to live with it. Or just kind of that twilight zone of where people pretend like it doesn't exist, like I experienced for so much of it. So that's kind of what I do now. I do Concussion Compass full time. And like you said, I do a lot of educating on Instagram because that was the first place when I was really, really, really not feeling well. I'm like, I could do a post. I can't do a course. I can't do a talk. I can't teach, but I can do a post. And so, yeah, that's been about 3 years since I got on that, a year and a half in Concussion Compass. And I think that's me in a nutshell.
That's great. I love how you explained how you still have some symptoms, but yet you know, like you said, well, I can start with a post, and you just started where you were, and that's grown exponentially. And so I want to ask you, kind of before we get into today's like official topic, what are some ways that you deal with your symptoms, and what are some strategies that you implement in your routine to help you kind of manage all of these things that you do?
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good question. So it's been a little bit of a learning curve. So I would say to anyone navigating it, the first kind of thing is your mindset. Like, you just want to stay curious. Don't hold it too heavy of emotional attachment to an outcome. So what I mean by that is if you have a day where you try something and it doesn't work and you feel terrible, it's just a learning experience and you do something different. That's all it is. So I think it's just been through the years kind of learning what my body likes and what feels good for my nervous system. And when is the time to get back to life by doing kind of things. So I have my morning routine is probably the most important thing. And at bare minimum, if I'm being good, it's that I don't check my phone for an hour. I don't check phone. I don't check email. I don't do anything like reactive, so that I can just ease into the day, even if it's 30 minutes. If I'm really in a flow, I'll make sure that I add in like journaling and some movement and some breath work, but that doesn't happen every day. More important is the just don't be super reactive when you wake up. And then I think I do, you know, a fair amount of pacing throughout the day. So I'm not pushing myself like too severely into symptoms where I'm going to get crashes. I'll take a look at my week and kind of figure out what feels sustainable and what feels good and what feels like I can end the day with a little energy to spare so that I don't burn out. And I do that. And I say no to things. I would do more than if I could, but it makes me get really clear on what's really important and what's really going to move the needle. And I kind of operate that way. And then of course I do, a little bit of my own rehab and exercise and eat well and all the last lifestyle things.
I love that. Thank you for sharing some of that. I mean, that's encouraging for me as I'm trying to figure out what the best routine is for my brain. And, you know, you can hear every podcast or you can learn from every like productivity business expert or every brain injury expert. And yet I like how you pointed out you had to figure out what worked for your nervous system and for your brain, because, you know, there are certain universal things that can probably be good for all of us, like staying off our phones for an hour. That's probably a good thing that I currently do not do that I think you're going to inspire me to start doing.
Because... Yeah, get an alarm clock. Phone goes in like the kitchen, something yeah, like that.
I think that's important. But then, you know, there are, you kind of have to realize like you might be able to tolerate a little bit more than others or less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things too, like when I was getting back to work, it was new. Like I used to work in mortar clinic and now I'm all online. So the whole concept of it is all new. So it was kind of like you'd start to get a sense of what you needed to do in a day. And then there's a point where I have to do a lot of like writing and like how I want like to create the process for people in Compass. And I've learned that to do that, I can't be exhausted and it can't be like paired in with like calls and other things like that. So I have like days now where Mondays and Fridays are like creative days. So I leave like a ton of white space that I don't feel like super full of pressure. Like, how am I going to get it done? And then Tuesdays and Thursdays are like my on days where I'll do like a podcast or like clerical stuff, like all those kind of things. And I'm finding that works really well too. So for anyone listening, you can kind of get a sense too of just not only the day-to-day, but like, what do you need to do in that day? And what kind of state do you need to be in to be able to access that part of yourself or that part of your brain? And just almost reverse engineer it. Like, how do I want to feel? What does this need to look like? Okay, what do I need to be in that state? And reverse engineer it from there. And I'm finding that really, really helpful, especially with brain injury symptoms, because I have a hard time switching back and forth with like context. So that's been super helpful.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, people can look at somebody like you and see your posts and see what you do with Compass and think, how is she able to do all that with her brain injury? But what you're describing is you have boundaries and you have routine and boundaries and saying no.
Yes.
Saying no. I mean, that in itself could be an hour long conversation.
Learning, oh God, yeah,
how to say no. And it's one of the most important things for us as survivors. And, you know, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, you don't want to end the day completely drained every day. So realizing what's the most important.
Yeah. And honestly, you can make a lot of headway doing small amounts of things every day. You really can. Like, the majority of what I do up until maybe the last 6 months, where now I have hired help, was like pretty small things in the day, but they were really, really, really intentional. And they were really meant to like move the needle. So I think it's like a blessing has been, it makes me only put my attention towards the things that actually matter for you. And so I think that's applies to everyone, but especially if you're someone that has limited capacity, don't shortchange the small bits that add up, because that is quite literally how I got to the point where when I started Compass and it was doing like an hour a day when I could barely function, or I would back up some content. And when I didn't feel well, I would take like a few days. Like, you can do it. You can do things in small bits. You just have to be clear on what matters to you and what you want.
Yeah, that's such good advice. So today I wanted to go into the conversation and the topic on the uniqueness of concussions and the different types. And I think it's a really great segue from talking about routine and the things we're talking about, because, you know, a big part of this is learning your limits and learning what works for you. Now, from your doctor expert opinion, I would love for you to be that ball of knowledge you talked about. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about different types of concussions, the uniqueness of the concussions. So,
yeah, I think, yeah, because it's one of those things where I didn't, obviously, for many, many years, understand what was happening to me. I knew I didn't feel well. I knew there were certain parts of it, but it didn't feel exactly like we described in physical therapy school. And so I just ended up random treatment to random treatment. And looking back, understanding what I was going through, I can tell you now what was going to work and what wasn't, or at least what was going to be like, it might work, we need to give it a try. But I didn't have an understanding at the time that there's just like, there's different types of concussions. So just like there's not one type of knee injury or one type of back injury, there's not one type of concussion. So I think what's really important for people to understand, whether you're brand new to concussions or whether you've been in it for a little bit, is that everyone has an individual kind of profile, for lack of better words. And you'll see it put in many different formats. And quite honestly, there isn't really one that's standardized quite yet. I'm waiting for the next consensus statement. I'm hoping they're going to like standardize something. But you'll hear anywhere from like kind of 3 to 7-ish categories of why you're still having persistent symptoms. And why that's important is because if you understand specifically where your symptoms are coming from, then you can get to targeted treatment faster. And what I'll see happen is people will, maybe they'll find someone like me on Instagram or like you on Instagram or their neighbor or someone else who's had a concussion, and they'll try to do what one of those people did for their dizziness or for their headache. But there's different kinds of dizziness and there's different types of headaches and they have different treatments. So I think one of the biggest needle movers you can do at any point in your recovery, and if you haven't had that yet, like today's the day, is understanding exactly what kind of symptoms you're experiencing and where they're coming from so we can start getting some sort of comprehensive care going. And I say comprehensive because I mean, we don't treat brains in like silos. We're not like individual parts that if we put all the wheels together, it'll just run. Our bodies work in like systems where they interact with each other. So understanding your symptom profile is step one. And then step two is, okay, how do I comprehensively work with that together? Is my neck an issue? And is that really struggling with my neck and my eyes? And if I integrate those things together, how is that doing? Oh, I'm starting to feel pretty crappy from the vision stuff. How do I regulate my nervous system in the meantime? Do I do a little grounding? Do I do a little breath work? And we had an expert recently who on Compass who referred to this as a pie. Her name was Brittany Charlet. She's like, you're all pies. She's like, you're all big, beautiful pies. And if you think of kind of the overall picture of your health as you have like, you know, maybe three or four different concussion subtypes and you have your lifestyle habits and you have the support of the people in your life and you have like psychosocial factors of like, where are finances at? Cause that's super stressful. What's going on with your job? What's going on with your friends? Like all those kind of things. And I think if people see themselves as a whole and see themselves as like an individual, it really helps get them into proper treatment faster and get better faster. And I think it prevents a lot of like treatment chasing. I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. I'm going to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I think if there's anything I could impart, it would be to start to get that under your belt and then go from there.
So how would somebody start to do that?
So there's a few ways. Ideally, in our ideal world, it would be wonderful if your healthcare provider took you through that in your individual, in your initial sessions. So you'd really be looking for someone who understands concussions. They treat a lot of them. They treat kind of symptoms similar to you. So you can, you know, if anyone knows someone in your area, you can also just go on Google, type in concussion, where you live, and like specialist, or if there's any type of specialist, and see what pops up. I usually tell people, take a look at their websites. It should specifically say they treat people with persistent symptoms. Get a few that you feel good about. Give the office a call first before you make the evaluation, to save yourself some time, and just say, you know, hi, I had a concussion this long ago. I'm experiencing X, Y, and Z symptoms. Is that something you have experienced treating successfully? And you want them to say yes. Then your second question is, and do you collaborate with any other professionals in the area if I need it? So you can start to get some kind of comprehensive care going. That's the ideal world. That's not available in everyone's area. So we have it as a mini course too. It takes like an hour. It's super fast. It's very affordable and you have lifetime access to it. So if you don't, that's available to you. Other ways would be like, I have them usually on Instagram. We talk about it, but I would recommend either going through it with a healthcare provider or going through it in the mini course, because that's going to be most helpful, rather than trying to like, you know, you take different pieces from what different people say and stick them together. It's better to have someone kind of give you a whole picture of you.
That's great advice. And I think that added piece of calling and asking, do you have experience treating this successfully? And hearing what they have to say is great. I find like if you can search concussion, like concussion clinics, like sometimes they'll be under a sports medicine concussion doctor. And, you know, at first when I was looking, I was thinking, but I didn't get a sports concussion. So I would feel like, oh, maybe I couldn't go to them. But that's not true. They treat concussions, whether you got it from sports or not. But sometimes there are certain doctors that are under like a sports medicine category. Would
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say too, the other place people get tripped up is they feel like they have to enter the healthcare system through a neurologist. Like I'll talk to people and they're waiting 6 months to see their neurologist so they can get started. And you don't have to necessarily do it that way. You can, But there's multiple points of access into the healthcare system. So it could be like a sports medicine doctor, like you mentioned, it could be a physical therapist, it could be a chiropractor, it might be your vision therapist. You're more looking for someone who has an understanding of what they do, but all the other people that might be involved as well, so that they can give you some sort of type of guidance is ideal. And I find that's really helpful rather than sitting and waiting and waiting and waiting for one person to give you like the key to the city. You can use other points of access. And if you need a referral, most healthcare providers, like most of your primaries, some neurologists, you can say, can you fax in a referral to this physical therapy clinic? Most of them, if you're an established patient, will say yes. So I would encourage you all not to sit and wait months on end for an appointment to get started. Kind of time is your friend. So getting in as soon as you can.
That's great advice. So I'd love to hear more about the different types of concussions. Would you be willing to talk about that?
Yeah. So we'll touch on like a few common ones. So right now in, so like in the mini course, for example, we use a research paper. It was actually out of 2017, and they use the acronym COACH CV. Like I said, you might find like other ways that people categorize it. We're all talking about the same thing. It's kind of just which buckets they're put in. And I hope to see it more standardized in the future. But to give you a few common examples, like cervical would be one. So our neck can very much mimic symptoms of concussion. So from subjective report alone, it's hard to tell if symptoms are coming from your neck, coming from concussion, or coming from both. And if you've had a concussion, you've sustained a whiplash injury, just given the mechanism that concussions happen. So that's a good one to get checked out. But I think people usually think I need to have neck pain or my motion needs to be limited. And that's not necessarily the case. You can also have headaches stemming from your neck. You can have dizziness stemming from your neck. You can kind of feel like you don't know where you are in space coming from your neck as well. Another really common one is ocular. So that's going to be your vision. And we're not talking about 20/20 vision. We're talking about, can your eyes move and work together, and can they process what's coming in through your visual system? So if you're someone who all of a sudden you are having a hard time understanding what you're reading, like it could be that your eyes can't focus together, or they can't track along the page, or hold kind of a spot. It could be that those things are working, but you're not processing what's coming through in through your visual system. So you're reading a page like 87 times and you're not having any comprehension of what's happening. So those are super, super common. Another one that I know we've both experienced and talked about is headaches. So you might hear it called post-traumatic headache. But there's different types of headaches. You want to figure out kind of what type or types you're experiencing to get treatment from that. Vestibular is another one. So that's going to be the dizziness, the feeling off balance, feeling just generally off, having a hard time with like escalators or elevators, anything like that can be a little bit of vision too, but tend to be in the vestibular realm. And I mean, let's just go for it. There's only two left. another one that's kind of newer in recent years is cardiovascular. And you'll hear this put different ways. You might hear it as autonomic. But we're all talking about like your essentially like blood flow and heart rate and respiratory rate and your ability to properly regulate things like that, which is fairly common post-concussion. And I think it's one that people are becoming more and more aware of and looping that more and more into treatment. So if you're someone, a really common example would be every time you exercise, your symptoms massively increase. That's called exercise intolerance. It would be under that like cardiovascular autonomic. And these are all treatable. Like these aren't like, oh, you live with it things. These are treatable things. And then the last one is going to be like mood. So mood, personality, crying for no particular reason. I had that for like 3 years where I would cry at the drop of a hat. or if like the wind blew wrong, it could be, but it could be like anger or irritability or depression, anxiety, feeling like a different person on the inside. Like our personalities are in our brains. So that just gives you a good general idea of some different subtypes of concussions and some different things that we would think about when treating you. A couple of the newer models, which I kind of like a little bit better, will include kind of the metabolic and inflammation component of things, which is really prominent in concussions as well. So keeping those things in mind when we're talking about treatment, but that's a good general once over lay of the land. And I'm sure you've listened and you're like, oh, I think I have that. And I think I have that. And I think I have that. And if you said, I think I have that to almost all of them, that's super normal. Most people have a combination or all, and it's just a matter of kind of dissecting from there and treating you. And I like to think of it as like, okay, we have lots of ways to treat you then. Like lots of things we can do to get you feeling better, or that you can do to get you feeling better.
Yeah, that's good. I was going to ask that because I feel like a lot of those different subtypes, so they can coexist.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And most commonly do. It's rare to have like one.
Okay. But what they do is it helps you to understand kind of the root of your symptoms or where they could be coming from.
Yeah, exactly. So if I'm talking to someone and they're telling me, you know, I feel pretty good with exercise, but every time I turn in bed, I'm crazy dizzy. Then we're going to probably start you with vestibular. Whereas like, if you're someone that's like, every time I exercise, I feel awful. And I have like this slew of other stuff and I just don't know what's coming from it. We're probably going to start you with some sort of like at least exercise program to get you properly regulated, because that's a very foundational piece of recovery for your brain. So it gives us insight into not only who you should be seeing, but kind of where you should start.
That's good. Yeah. Cause I think where to start is probably the hardest part. And especially for, you know, we probably have a variety of people listening. They may have just recently had their injury and be just starting to research and figure it out. Or we could have people listening that could be 5, 10, 20 years down the road after their injuries. And I know for me, my first TBI was in 2007. So there was really not much that they just said, rest and you'll be fine. And I had to relearn how to do all these things. And it was just like, there was like no way. Like I went over 10 years without having the vestibular dysfunction diagnosed. So yeah. I spent over 10 years just my balance being off and I kept falling and getting more concussions. And I've had over a dozen concussions from undiagnosed vestibular system issues and falling and hitting my head and falling down steps. And so, but I had no way of knowing. I didn't even know what the vestibular system was.
Yeah.
You know, I had no way of knowing what it was. Yeah. And so if you're listening to this, I want you to be encouraged by Dr. Molly's, all the information she's sharing, because it's called Hope Survives Podcast, but my goal is to bring you tangible hope. And so what Molly's doing in breaking this down is bringing you tangible hope and going, if you feel any of these ways, guess what? It's treatable.
Yeah. And it's treatable no matter how far out you are. Like these are, for lack of better words, like software problems. They're not hardware problems. And anything that's not working quite well can be retrained. And so like you said, you didn't know for years. I didn't know, like, I didn't even know what vision therapy was. And I had like horrific visual issues. I think I found my first vision therapist, I was 4 years in, and I had barely any treatment for the first 4 to 5 years. And I was able to make obviously so much progress since then. So I would say if you're early on, health is your priority. And if you're someone who it's been a while and you kind of are on the, oh, I'm learning to deal with it, it's kind of a matter of one, you don't have to. So if it's something that is affecting your life in a significant way, these things are treatable and they're treatable even if it's been a while. I think the latest I've personally talked to someone was 10 years fully recovered. And then the longest I read about was a case study and it was like 50 years post-injury. So the brain really is incredibly resilient. And we're just getting better and better and better and better at learning how to treat these things. Even in the last, like, I mean, I don't know from your perspective, but the last like 3 years, I'm like, it's night and day. Like, it's like, we have a ways to go. Don't get me wrong. But it's so much better than it used to be, or from where I was originally when I was injured to now, completely different. I think if I had my injury now, it would be an entirely different story.
Yeah, I think I definitely know that. But it's there's that aspect of the invisible side of it that I feel like always kind of needs to be mentioned, because I feel like we can fool ourselves too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because it's not just that it's invisible to other people, but I look in the mirror and I think, I look like I'm doing fine. What is wrong with me?
Yeah, well, and it's like, you know, you like say you break a leg, like it physically stops you, right? Concussions, you can feel like you're about ready to die and still like speak and walk and like look normal in so many cases. And it's like, it makes it easier sometimes, at least for me in the beginning, like I would just push through a lot, partly because I wasn't cognitively there enough to like, hey, I'm really doing bad. Maybe I should stop. Like, and it just, it wasn't like I wasn't cognitively there and like, it didn't occur to me, but no one in my life picked up on it because I looked so normal. And I think that was a really, really hard part of it. Or even when I got into it, there were certain people that I just didn't want to be around because I felt like I always had, like, I used to call it, like, I always felt like I was in the twilight zone. Like, they would talk to me as if it just didn't exist. And it was so, it was such a huge part of every single moment of my day. And it just felt, I always felt like not totally seen or not totally heard or believed. And I think when we talk about thinking of ourselves as a pie, that was a big piece of my pie back then, that I really learned how, needed to learn how to address and learn to share with people that had earned the right to hear my stories. The Brene Brown quote that I liked, learn to set boundaries, which I was not any good at, learn to say no. But it kind of came because if I didn't start to do those things, I was just not doing well. And I didn't know where that was going to leave me. So it was like, you had to, but then that's this whole other aspect that people have to navigate with a brain injury, with not fully understanding what's happening. And then all of a sudden you need to explain it to other people to make them feel better about it. It's just like, it's a lot. So I think what you do, or just getting with like support people in your area or online or with whatever it might be, is a super helpful part as well.
Yeah. And what you do as well, yeah, makes such a huge impact, because nowadays when somebody has a brain injury, they search on social media and they find information.
Yeah.
And it's right there. And that was not accessible.
Yeah. It didn't exist for me either.
So yeah, I'm just so grateful for what you do in sharing your expertise and helping to break down brain injury symptoms in a way that is digestible, you know, pieces, easy to understand, because you're a survivor, so you know how the information needs to be broken down to explain it in a way that we can learn from.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and like everything on Instagram and Encompass is literally made for people with concussion symptoms. So like the font choices, the colors, the spacing, like everything is incredibly intentional in the program. Like the video, you're never going to see a video longer than 10 minutes. Most of them you can listen to like a podcast. I never get to wear my striped clothes anymore because like I literally will wear solids during those kind of things. So yeah, it's important to be with people who understand the way you're processing right now and give you avenues to be successful with it, because that's part of it too.
Yeah. Thank you so much for what you do and for sharing and breaking down some of these symptoms and ideas for us today on the podcast. I, before you go, want to ask you, what is a final word of encouragement or hope that you would have for our listeners?
I would just give it almost like a call to action. for anyone who's feeling like stuck or like they're not getting anywhere or frustrated with their current circumstance, the ability of your body to recover, given the circumstances, so many of which you can, you know, do on your own, like think, like literally like nutrition, learning how to exercise, right? Like there's such like low hanging fruit that no matter where you are, everyone can learn to do on their own. And so I would just say, really know that if you're not in a place that you want to be, that there is hope. And I used to have a practitioner that would say, a year is going to come and go no matter what. Because I said, I don't know if I can do this for another year. He's like, well, a year is going to come and go no matter what. So where do you want to be when it does? And I always think of that whenever I feel stuck, of like, okay, this isn't where I want to be. It feels really heavy, but what can I do like today? And sometimes that's nothing. Sometimes that's like lay. Sometimes I wallow a little bit. Sometimes it's like getting outside. Sometimes it's making an appointment. You know, it can be any of those things. So I don't want people to think it has to be like militant, because it's not. But really commit to yourself in whatever that looks like for you. And changes are possible.
That is so good. Commit to yourself. Oh, I need that on a poster. It's so good, because I find, you know, with brain injury symptoms, like you want change. I want change. I don't want my life to be like this. I don't want to keep dealing with this. But in order for that to happen, boundaries are going to need to be set. Changes are going to need to be made. You know, it's not going to just happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you got to do it. And it's like, if something's not working for you, you're not going to get to where you want to go by doing all the exact same things still. Like there's some like reel going around Instagram right now that's all about like, no one's coming to save you. Like, there are going to be people to help you. There's going to be people to support you. There's going to be people to guide you, but like, you have to do it. And so, yeah, just commit to yourselves.
Yeah. And often, like you were talking about, it's doing less. Yeah. Is the changes that we need to make with as survivors is not necessarily doing more and like adding in a morning routine. Cause you know, I used to think, oh, that's so much like something to add. But what you're really doing is you're subtracting. You're adding, you're putting in space and taking away a lot of the distractions and maybe the commitments that you don't need right now. Mm-hmm. And so any changes that you want to make on your recovery journey is going to be something that's better for your brain and better for your nervous system and exactly. better for you. And so we're not talking like making changes in a way that's going to be highly stressful. You know, it might be there's going to be an adjustment, but a little bit at a time can make a big difference. Like Molly, I just bringing it back to what you said at the beginning about your morning routine and how that helps you manage your symptoms, and how at the minimum you do like an hour without your phone, but other days you add in other things, and it depends on how you're feeling that day.
Exactly. That's so funny you said that. And I'm really glad you did, because I was talking with a friend and she's like, was struggling with some things. She's like, I'm exercising and I'm eating well and I'm doing this and I'm doing this and then I'm doing this and I'm doing this. And finally she was like, what I needed to do was nothing. Like, she was like, that in itself felt so like doing all the right things felt so overwhelming that she was like, you know, and so it's kind of like exactly what you said. What does it feel like in your body? The whole goal is to support your nervous system. So if you're super on edge or overwhelmed to paralysis, that's not the goal. Like, always go back to the goal and then kind of go from there.
Yeah, I love it. I had a day this week that I really crushed out my symptoms. And I felt like I was doing all the right things. I got up and I exercised. And part of my issues is autonomic. So it's important for me to like walk and get exercise in. And so, you know, I exercised and I made a green smoothie and I showered and I did my work. But I worked for too long. I didn't chunk it up right. And I didn't take enough breaks. And I was working on my computer and I just was on a roll. And I just kept pushing in. And then I crashed. And I was no good for the next morning, the next day. And so I was talking to, I just started seeing a new chiropractor who's a neurological chiropractor, and he said, Christabel, you have all the right ingredients. You're just putting them in the wrong order.
Yeah,
exactly. And I thought that was so nice how he said that, because I thought to myself, like, yes, exercise is one of the right ingredients, but maybe I shouldn't have, you know, worked for so long or exercised for so long. Maybe I work for 45 minutes and then I do a short walk. Then I work again for a little bit, and then I add in, do some of my other neurological exercises and my vision exercises. And so basically you might have the right ingredients or the right things that you're doing, but sometimes it's just you're doing it too much at once.
Yeah, I love that. I love thinking it like a recipe like that, or kind of like a whole picture. Like, 'cause even think like someone's like, okay, I did a little OT and it helped, but I'm struggling. And then I did a little PT and it helped, but I was struggling. And I was like, well, what if you like mixed those things together? Or, you know, it's all about like, how are you putting it together to support you? And I just think like, as a whole, that can be like our takeaway from this. So, it's like, how are you all like, how is it all comprehensively working for you? Rather than feeling like it's like this one thing, or I have to do this in this order. Or like you said, I did all these great things.
I realized it's too much for me to do 10 minutes on the treadmill and to do my vision exercises at the same time. I mean, I'm not while I'm on the treadmill, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I meant like, you know, one after the other.
Yeah.
It's too much. So, you know, breaking those up throughout the day, and yes, I'm supposed to do them, but it might seem more intuitive to get it all done in the morning, but that's not going to work for everyone. And so back to that whole unique thing, right? You are unique. Your symptoms are unique. Your brain and body's needs are unique, and it might vary day by day, but doing what you need to do for yourself. I think, Molly, you set a great example of that. So thank you for that.
I try. And it's never going to be perfect, but like, you know, there's a lot of ways that you can do it to rebuild for sure.
Yeah. It's so good. Well, we could keep chatting, but I think it's time to end this episode. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming on Hope Survives podcast. For people to get in touch with you, they can follow you on Instagram at Molly Parker PT or at Concussion Compass. So you can check out what she has to offer there. And yeah, I highly recommend following her on Instagram, because I'm always learning something from you, Dr. Molly.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you so much. And hopefully we'll have you back on again someday.
Yes, please.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Hope Survives podcast. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to subscribe and stay tuned, as more episodes will be coming each week. And check out hopeafterheadinjury.com for more. I'll see you next time. And remember, there's always hope.